to start with, does anybody have any questions about mantra? Well, I don't want to speak, but go on. If you do, is there anything that you're curious about mantra? Because I'd love to make sure that I cover everything. Everything, the infinite subject that it is. So probably, you know, the thing about mantra is that it is an it is really like a the idea of like a zip file on a computer, that it looks like it's little, but it just keeps spreading open and open. So good, pens.
Is it important that you know what they mean?
Good question. Yeah, good question. Is it important that you know what they mean? Any other questions? So that's a hard question. I'm just joking. It's a very good question. I just thought, let's all say questions if you've got them. Yes?
Does it matter how long you take or it takes?
How long each mantra is?
Is there sort of like a time for each particular mantra?
Oh, well, you know, actually... there are some schools that say you need to chant certain mantras at certain times for certain lengths and so on, and there are others that are like, no, you just, it just depends what your teacher tells you to do. So, you know, like for example, Al gave me a mantra and said, okay, chant that 9 times, 3 times a day, kind of thing, like that kind of thing, for a specific reason, and with specific understanding of what it's about. So I think it's better to, like, you know, to have guidance from a teacher regarding the timing. But I'll give you more details. Any other questions? Oh, Steffi, you've arisen. Very happy to hear you.
Is there a different importance if you say them out loud?
Yes, great. These are such great questions. Okay, so, and can you repeat yours again, Pen?
What it
means, yeah. So the idea, I'll just give a little bit of background first and then I'll come up. And if anyone else thinks of any questions, please do ask. Part of the reason, just so you know, is why I'm asking you to ask questions, is because we understand in education that when you actually ask a question that you want to find out the answer to, you're actually more likely to take in the knowledge. You actually assimilate it in a good way. Whereas, you know, if you just kind of like, you know, have you ever heard of this term, infobesity? Right? Where there's just so much... no drama. Right? There's just so much information, right? And we can kind of get overwhelmed by it. So I don't want to just kind of like pour it all onto you. There'll be a mat out for you, Richard. So just take whichever mat's empty that you want at the back or the middle. So the thing is that I want it to be really meaningful to you, because that is the whole idea of mantra. And so Penny's question is such a good one, because is it necessary that you understand the meaning of it? Well, realistically, often, if you think of the idea of mantra as almost like a medicine, if you like, it's referred to as an instrument that protects, that realistically, there may be times that you are not actually in the experience of the vibration, which is why you chant it, to help you to get into that vibration. So, do you know the meaning of it? Well, you may not, you may desire the meaning of it, you see, but you may not feel it in you yet. And that's not a reason to not chant it, that's a reason to chant it. Do you get that? And then through the repetition and the kind of the willingness to immerse yourself in it, there's a sense of surrendering into it, that there is a revelation that occurs, so that then it does become meaningful. So does that make sense to you? That it's not that you have to already understand the meaning, but you will get to understand the meaning. And the teaching is that could be over lifetimes. That's how like much meaning there might be. So you know, because sometimes this description is given of the, how to understand what mantra is that if we were to hear the sound of someone playing the guitar, right? right? So say we're in here, we can hear someone playing the guitar, and we think it's out there, and then so we walk out those doors, and then we go, oh no, actually it's got quieter, so then we go out those doors, and then, you see? So you as you, through your efforts, you can get eventually to the source, and sometimes you might realise you're off track, and so then you change your track to get to the source, and then you can go, oh, so that's where the sound of the guitar is coming from. So that's kind of the idea of mantra, is that you follow the mantra to the source, and that's the thing of the revelation of it, the meaningfulness of it. So the source of what, right? Like this is like the crux of the whole reason to practice mantra, and it doesn't matter if it's silent or aloud, although many of the teachings about it say that it's most meaningful when chanted quietly, chanted inside. However, there's, you know, I think that that often aloud is incredibly profound, and I think the thing about the when it's quietly inside is that it is going into more and more subtle realms, and that's very 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 beautiful. So helpful, but don't take that to mean to not chant it aloud. Do you get that? So actually making the utterances, like if you think of, for example, Om, right? So I'm going to teach you a few mantras and teach you some of the stories behind them, because I think it does help to make the mantras meaningful when you do hear some of the stories behind them, and that's just my my thing that I think it's helpful. You know, that's, as your teacher, I can give this to you, a way of looking at it, if you like. It's kind of like an interest area, if you like. So for example, the mantra Om, right, which we chant at the beginning of class and at the end of class here as a tradition, that it's made up of utterances of sounds, and they're sounds that are cross-cultural. So, you know, have you ever been in another country and you can't speak the language, but you're attempting to tell them, yeah, that was yummy. You know, like you attempt to communicate, you make the sound. You can, the other day in our teacher training, one of the, I'm just looking for Susan, it wasn't, not here, ain't you back? No. And anyway, in her talk, which was really great, she was talking about the, how, like say when you lay on your bed, right, and you lay on your bed at night, sometimes you go, ah, oh, and it's involuntary almost, you know? It's a natural utterance, if you like. And this is this idea of Om being a primordial sound, and so that when we chant it, it connects us to that. That's the idea. You're consciously, by being aware of what you're doing and saying, you're consciously connecting to that vibration, reminding you of the source of life, right? And my theory about Om and about all of the mantras, it struck me one day as I was thinking, so many of the mantra is, like say for example, Om Namah Shivaya. So Shiva is the aspect of pure stillness, you know how so much in life's changing all the time, and you're changing, like your body's changing. If you look at a photo of when you were little, you're much different now. You know, so we understand our body is changing, and we understand our opinions change. Who hasn't changed their opinion about something, right? So there's, like, think of foods that you like now that you might not have liked before. Like our preferences change. You know, so we recognise that, you know, as much as there is a bit of a human tendency to want everything to stay the same, it actually doesn't. So we recognise this ever-changing aspect of life. Yet, there is some essence that we all really kind of can feel that is unchanging. Like the you that I'm talking to was you when you were like a different, you know, when you were 10. Still you. Right? Do you get what I mean? Even though, like, they say all this stuff about every cell's changing all the time, and so theoretically, you, like, actually not just look like a different body, you are a different body according, you know, to that understanding. But your essence, or your soul, if you want to call it that, that is never changing, right? So this, and that is like a sense of mean, that's, you know, that's when we meditate, it's to experience that. That's why we sit to meditate. You know, like, you don't know, have you heard of, like, there's some people saying, oh, well, you know, like, running, that's my meditation. Or swimming, that's my meditation. Well, it is a form of meditation. It's not really meditation according to what like we understand actually happens when you're meditating. Do you see? Because actually, it's like an early step in where there's one point of concentration, where there's a connection of movement and you know, with breath and there's a like that. There's definitely dharana going into dhyana in the Sanskrit terms of the eight limbs of concentration towards meditation, but it's not, and certainly there's endorphins, right? There's certainly like people can feel a feeling of like uplifting, so don't get me wrong, I'm not saying not to do that stuff, right? It's just that actually meditation is when we are so still in a state that is like sleep with our brain waves, but we're awake during it and we're in stillness. Do you see? So that's like these deeper levels of samadhi. So that is when we're experiencing what is referred to as Shiva. Okay, that's the, like you could say, the soul state, your connection to the source of all life. And the mantra for that, Om Namah Shivaya, which is Om is the name of Shiva. Right? That's how you could translate it like that. Namaha is like the name of. So it's a simple way of saying it. So you could say, oh, so that's what Om is. Well, so when we chant Om, that's what we're talking about, right? Okay. But then what about how then there's Om Aim Saraswatiye Namaha? So that's a mantra to that which is wisdom. What about Om Dum 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 Durgaye Namaha? So Durga, don't we tell you the story of Durga? It's got so many stories, I'm not really going to get them all in, so we'll just see which ones you want to hear, right? So I love the story of Durga, and one of the reasons why I love to tell you this story is because the thing that I want to just explain to you about mantra, right, is that from my personal experience, because I just have always loved mantra, I've always been really drawn to mantra. Before I met, you know, my teacher, I used to meditate using the mantra Om that I just taught myself when I was a little kid, and this is before I started doing asana practice really, and I would be so uncomfortable and I'd feel like my back was breaking because I was probably quite weak, you know, and I'd sit there and I'd go Om in my head Om like over and over and over and over, and so I've always kind of been just naturally drawn to mantra, so I've always like wanted to learn them and learn lots of mantra and you may be like that too because you're here, right? Because you know my daughter River, when we were talking about memories, I was there. Are you there when River said that? She was like, well, Mum, you know, maybe what makes you think people want to go to a mantra workshop? I was like, maybe everyone doesn't love it. So, but we do, don't we? That's why we're here. We love it, you know. And that's his understanding. It's funny because like I just indoctrinated her in her whole life. But the that's the thing about yoga. This understanding that there is this kind of like pull in you, and that you do, that's why you're here, right? Because you do love it. There's something about mantra you're curious about, and you want to learn about, and you want to invoke it, you want to bring it into your life, right? Is that true, right? Otherwise you wouldn't have come here for 2 hours of talking about mantra. So you get what I'm saying, and I had that kind of thing. I always was very interested in it. And so I would just learn lots and lots of mantra. And I just wonder if this is the case for you, right? And this is why I think Penny's question is such a good one. Even if you don't, like, so my personal experience is that it wasn't so, like, I thought I understood the meaning of it, right? So I studied about it, I chanted it, I thought I understood the meaning of it. But then what happened one day was actually one night that my house was broken into. I used to live around the corner here, and I was there alone with my son who was, I think he was about, I don't know, 13 or something then, 14. And so he's little, you know. And And that I'd heard this noise, talking about sound, you see, because the thing about mantra, right, is this idea that we get that sound has an effect on us, doesn't it? Have you ever heard horrible music and you're like, oh, you know? Like, I know some people really like heavy metal, right? So don't, if that's you, that's great, good for you. But, you know, sometimes it's like, wah, wah, and I'm like, oh, dear God, you're like, I have to turn it off because it has an effect. Do you know, we all get that sound has an effect on us, right? Anyway, so this particular night, I hear this sound, and it woke me up. And I thought, what's that sound? And I thought, oh, because my daughter was staying with me, you know, she used to live over east, and she was staying with me, and I thought, oh, maybe it's Tassie, she's forgot her key, right? So I think maybe she's trying to get in her bedroom window. So I get up, and I go and look in her out her bedroom window, and it's not her. So I'm like, oh, that's weird. Maybe I just imagined that sound, right? And so I'm in my hallway, you know, like those old houses that have got hallways with bedrooms off the side, and then there was this back, you know, room at the back. You know, that's typical kind of house. Can you picture the hallway, the wooden hallway, and there's a glass door at the end of the hallway, and there was a front door there, right? So I'm in the middle of the hallway. We actually had a couple of dogs at the time. One of them was like, the kind of dog that people get really scared of. You know those bull terrier dogs that people go, oh, they don't want to touch them, so scary looking. Okay, so I'm like, I've got Ridley, it's fine. I'm not worried about anything. So I think I'll just let Ridley out the front door. So if there is anyone out there, then I'm not worried, right? So I let Ridley out the front door, close the front door. I'm in the hallway by myself. I turn around to go back towards my bedroom and I see movement in the back through the glass doors. And I thought, what is that? You know, and there's a big tree out the back, a big pomegranate tree. And I thought, oh, maybe it's just the tree, right? Maybe it's the tree out there. And I'm looking for a sec, and I just keep walking towards my bedroom, and then I think, oh my God, it's somebody. There's somebody there. You know, I could see this big, tall figure with a, you know, hoodie on. And I just automatically go racing down the hallway to get to the door, going, whoa, who is it? Who is it? Who is it? Right? Which, just by the way, I just want to go on a little tangent here, is that this is one of my theories, right? You know how we understand we have in our autonomic nervous system the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system, right? And the sympathetic nervous system, for me, in that moment, went into fight. So do you understand fight, flight or freeze, everyone? Everyone's had, right? And I've just got this theory, I've just been thinking about it lately, okay, is that some of us maybe automatically go into one more often. Have you? Do you think that is true? Do you find that? Like, I've just noticed whenever there's been some dramatic thing, I'll often go into fight. Anyone else? Some people just naturally go into freeze. It's just a theory. I don't know if it's true. I'd love to find out from everyone. But from your nods, I'm guessing yes. Okay? So I've got this thing that I've been thinking about is that, say, for example, if you know that your one tends to be fight, because I've just been thinking about autoimmune diseases, and that's like the body fighting itself, and I've been thinking about, you know, this teaching of loving kindness. And that maybe there is really something in this to be practicing just pure love all the time within ourselves, recognizing that because life can be stressful, you know, there are basically constant pressures, if you think of it like that. You know, this idea that, you know, that if we just kind of leave it to itself, everything goes to entropy, you know, this concept of that, you know. So there's basically constant effort needed in life, you know, that's a teaching in yoga. That's kind of like, that's, you know, we could refer to that as tapas. So to make sure that it doesn't become so in the stress reaction of fighting, maybe. And say if you find that you're you tend to go into freeze, which maybe some of you do, then, you know, can you see how our yoga practice can help us to actually, you know, often in class, you know, when I'll say to you about, imagine you're bringing like warmth into that area, a feeling of, like we do practices, like imagine bringing light into that area. So in other words, not fighting with us. There is a tendency for people to fight with themselves. Like people say, I've got a bad back or a bad this, right? Or we have a tendency to freeze, to like put, you know, to kind of like just kind of ignore it, numb it, pretend it's not there. Or we may have a flee reaction of like, just run away from it. You see what I mean? Probably we don't all just do one. We probably can all do all three. Because do you ever find... Yes, Marks?
So I've recently
found out that with those three fight or flight freeze reactions, they're all very normal and all pertinent to different situations. So sometimes it's necessary to fight, sometimes it's necessary to be still, almost so that the tiger doesn't sense that you're there, and sometimes it's prudent to run away.
Yes.
So that they're all very necessary reactions, not that one's more important than the other, but all three come from a very primal state.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah, and that's, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that we have them.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking it.
No, no, no. And I just wonder whether some of us tend, for whatever reason, maybe we've thought one has worked best for us in a certain situation. That's all. That's what I wonder, whether it becomes a bit habitual. And this is part of why mantra is helpful to you, because it can help you to get out of a habitual track. That's just something that I think is one of the benefits of understanding about mantra. So here, I've just got off on a tangent about running down the hallway. So I'm running down the hallway fighting, right? But my point about it is that they're instinctive reactions, which is what Mark's saying, and definitely can be prudent. But do you think, really, when you consider this, is it prudent for me, little Tamara, running down the hallway towards a guy who I think is as big as a tree? Do you get that? So we think they're prudent, and certainly in terms of survival, there is evidence that that's what's helped us all to survive. But is it helping us to survive at our optimum all of the time? That's all I'm trying to get at. That's what I'm saying here. So anyway, because it's just an instinctive thing to do. So I'm instinctively running down the hallway, running towards the scary guy, but then he's not there. And then I thought, oh, I've just totally imagined this, it isn't even real. I walk into that whole area and think, oh, it must have just been the tree, except that my whole big, huge doors are off. They're huge doors, up to there, this big, massive glass door. That was the sound. The person was probably a couple of people, because there was a few of my garden brooms and stuff, had obviously levered off the big door, right? And so then I was just full-blown fear, right? Because I couldn't close the door, which again is an instinctive thing. And the reason I'm sharing you this story is because the whole idea of mantra actually relates to story, because there's a certain part in our brain that has an effect when we're talking about story. Sal, do you mind turning off the fans? Because I'm just thinking that might be a bit cool. So I completely get freaked out. I'm calling out. Of course the dog hasn't done anything, by the way. No one hasn't barked. I'm yelling out to my son, who's fast asleep, which is good, right? And, call the police. The police came really quickly, and they came with big, huge dog, they're so scary, those dogs, when they're doing their thing, Oh my God, it was so scary. They're running through. My son was sitting next to me, and wanting to protect, and I'm bringing this all up for you because, although obviously it's a personal story, we all have all of these elements in us. This is kind of the concept of understanding mantra, that the stories relate to all aspects of ourselves. It's a Jungian psychology kind of way of looking at it, if you like. And so, and they said, so the police came. By this time, it's been going on for ages, because they said, we've got to wait for the forensic people, blah, blah, blah. And all the police kept saying is, they always come back. Right? Thanks, I just wanted to do without that. Right? An impressionable child sitting next to me, very impressionable. I know what you're talking to. long story, but all over, they didn't come back, just so you know. But I didn't know they weren't going to come back. And I used to have this house, the front door key was under the mat, by the way. So, they could have just walked in the front door, right? I used to leave things open all the time, and the police were like, you've got to lock everything. Well, that door was locked, by the way. That's how come they had to lever it off. And they kept saying all these things it's a safe house. It's just that they could have been looking in from out in the laneway. just things that were making me kind of a bit scared, right? So anyhow, long story, but then what happened was is that I woke up in the night, around the same time, it was really weird, I noticed it was the same time that the thing happened, that I woke up and I just thought, oh, did I close the windows? Did I lock the windows? So one time I just went and just locked all the windows and I felt really good and I felt happier that I'd done that and I just went back off to sleep. And then another night I woke up and I thought, just turn the lights on outside and just check there's no one there. And before I knew it, it was becoming a very bad habit that I was waking up. Probably the psychologists in the room are thinking OCD starting, right? Because you know the thing, maybe some of you don't know much about OCD, but have you heard of like when people, they say that thing where people overwash their hands, right? Well, at one point it was comforting to them. And then it becomes obsessive. It becomes that they have to do that. And even when their hands are raw, so it doesn't actually help. And I could recognize, uh-oh, this is not actually helping me. It did help at one point, but now I realize it's not helping me because I'm waking up against my will. And my heart's beating out of my body, you know. And so I thought, I have to stop. I have to stop myself doing this. I have to stay in bed, right? And so guess what happened? The Durga mantra just, as soon as I'm like, oh my God, what can I do? What can I do? I have to do something to stop myself from doing this. I just immediately started chanting Om Dum 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 Durgaye Namaha to myself. Like very powerfully, in a very strong way. And it just got me to, it just was like, doom, doom, doom. It got me to lay on the bed. It just got me to stay on the bed, which was a really helpful step for me at that point. And I just kept chanting it. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is that I have chanted other mantra, you know, for different things in my life. I'd never deliberately chanted that mantra before, except for learning it. Do you get that? But it just came to me when I needed it. And I really needed it, and it really helped me. And so then another night I woke up I wasn't sort of already halfway out of the bed. I just started chanting the mantra and then I went off to sleep. And then gradually, like at just a few, you know, like not that often, didn't happen like every night anymore. Every now and again, and then I'd go, vroom, vroom, vroom. And it wouldn't have to be, it would just be kind of quicker and easier and lighter, and then I'd go back off to sleep. And then I just had no problems. Then I just like, it's like it never, it's as if it never happened. So it kind of sounds sort of magical, doesn't it? And that's the whole idea of mantra, that they are kind of magical. That it's said to be that there's this sacred resonance in the mantra that is like, it's intangible, but when, it's almost like when you want it, it comes to you. Does that make sense, everyone? So I don't know if you feel like doing pigeon pose. Like, do you want me to tell you the story of Durga, the story of it? Okay. So if you feel like doing pigeon pose, I thought you might like to, but you don't have to. Some of you might like, and you've got to be joking. What you could do instead, what you might like to do instead, is lay onto your back. I mean, I must say, Steph's looking like a good model over here of doing a restorative twist. You might want to do a restorative twist instead. You might like to do pigeon instead. Or you may like to just lay on your back and pop your block underneath your sacrum with your legs bent, like that. So I'm giving you three options. Or just stay seated while I talk to you. It's just that I don't want you to get... So... please feel free during this whole workshop to move around however you like. If you feel like doing something else, do it. So the actual story of Durga, have you heard of the idea of the goddess Durga? So she's depicted as this wild, beautiful woman with her hair flying, riding a tiger. Have you heard of this story? And she can, it's very glamorous, and she can like go through the jungle like missing every tree. And you know, just for my for my friends here who are guys, you know, this all of these different mantra, they have, sometimes there's the masculine aspect, like Shiva is referred to as a masculine aspect, and Durga a feminine. And that the yoga is the joining of the two. And this teaching in yoga is that for all of us to access both aspects within ourselves, so then we have union. And so even though I'm saying it as in goddess, and you might be going, well, I'm a guy, it's like, from a Jungian psychology point of view, it's like the anima and the animus. If this makes more sense to you, everyone's heard of yin and yang, right? So we would like a balance of both. So the story goes about Durga is that she wasn't even in existence. What used to be the case, and you know I'm saying this to you, just like a story, like we're watching a movie together, right, of different characters. So Durga wasn't even in existence when there was this demon buffalo that lived on Earth, half demon, half buffalo. And this demon buffalo, he wanted, like, he knew that the gods could grant him wishes, like some kind of, like, they're referred to as a boon. And he knew that if he meditated for thousands of years, that the gods would look upon him favorably. It's kind of like a penance, if you like. And he did it. He meditated for thousands of years until the god appeared before him and said, kind of like, if you like, you could imagine it like a genie in a bottle. It's like he rubbed the bottle enough times in the right way. And the genie appeared and said, what do you want? I'll give it to you. And he said, I wish to be never be able to be killed by any man or god. He asked for immortality. And the god, thought about it for a moment and then thought, oh, well, why not? This person's meditating all the time, must be really good, so yeah. But then the evil glint in his eye just after he'd said yes kind of was a bit of a warning. He went, oh, well. And at this point in the story, I'd just like to ask you, have you ever had a feeling of an intuition? Like, uh-oh, but you've proceeded anyway. Oh, well, you might need Durga. So the story goes, he no longer was good because he felt he had nothing to lose. He nobody could kill him. So he started wreaking havoc across the whole world. He was, huge, massive wars broke out across the world, and not only across the earth, but also into the heavens. He started attacking the gods, and the gods did not like that, right? Because that had never happened before. So therefore, what happened was that all of the gods came together. They all came together and put their heads together, which they'd never done before. But they realised that they had to. Which I, by the way, friends, have you ever felt like, because, like such a strong necessity that you had to do something, even if it wasn't easy, because it was necessary, you did it? And so this teaching in this story is like, let's welcome that. So they came together, put their heads together, and because of that, this incredible light, this dazzling light, which is referred to as the embodiment of Adi Shakti, arose. And it had never happened before. But this brilliant light just shone so greatly that from this light was birth. Durga. So, it's like the idea of the goddess that had never existed before arose. And all of the gods together gave her all of their, they all gave her kind of gifts that she could take into battle, like an array of weapons. when you're ready, we'll change to the other side. So, like, they gave her things like, you know, sabers and, like, a special bell that could confuse the demon. I love that one, a bell to confuse the demon. And big swords and all of these. She had 10 arms, so she could carry all of these weapons. And a great tiger to ride upon. So that's what all of these different gods gave her, all these things to go into battle against the demon buffalo. And so she appeared down on the earth, and the demon buffalo, he sees her and he's not worried, like, no one can kill him. So they go into battle, which I think is kind of interesting, isn't it? Because it kind of goes back to, like, what Marg was just saying before, is that there's nothing wrong with going into battle when we need to, right? But sometimes we do need to. But the point of this embodiment of Adi Shakti is this light is light of pure consciousness. So be conscious of when we're going into battle and why we're going into battle. Do you get that? So this great fight began between Durga and the demon buffalo that lasted for 10 days and 10 nights. It's a long time, right? And this is a symbol, right? Because this whole idea of the understanding of these stories is that it's all symbolic. So often, you know, we like things to be immediate, don't you reckon? And we don't want it to be a long time, you know. Probably after like day three, she probably felt pretty tired, right? And that's how sometimes we are. But imagine if you think of it as a noble battle. It's like the great fight. So in other words, you keep putting in the effort. You don't give up. And the understanding of these stories is that they speak to your unconscious. So you know exactly where is the place for you not to give up. And you also know the place where to cut ties, where to use the sword. You know, in the story that I just told you before, because this idea of the way that I'm talking to you about these stories is that you could look at it from the aspect that this concept of that all of the characters, that we're all of the characters. So when I was, you know, getting like overly concerned, maybe that's another way of describing OC, overly concerned. Instead of obsessive. Overly concerned. Not equanimous. Basically, you know, and the reason why I've shared that story with you guys is that every one of us can do this stuff where we worry about something that's not happening at the time. Like, I was perfectly safe in my lovely bed. So all of us at certain times have to go in to fight the demon buffalo. The demon buffalo that is that which is overly concerned. I mean, sometimes, you know, you can think of it as like an overthinking mind. Because the problem is that the overthinking mind can create a physiological effect in our body that is so dramatic, like, for example, the pounding heart rate. But it feels real. So when we chant mantra, it's accessing a deeper aspect. It's referred to as the Vijnana Maya Kosha. It's referred to in English as your wisdom layer. So what happened is Durga won. Of course. She won. And balance was restored. When you're ready, let's just sit up, cross-legged. So would you like to chant the Durga mantra now? Would you like to learn it? Do you want to do it? So, get into a position where you're comfortable. You can sit cross-legged if you like. You don't have to sit cross-legged though, but often after doing that it's easier to sit. So you can sit onto your bolster or your blanket. And can you just bring your hands onto your lower abdomen? Okay. So right down low here. Okay. So just gently put one hand there and the other hand on top. Let me press into here, just for a second. And then just close your eyes and see when you breathe out if you can just kind of hug your belly back a little. See if you can just let your whole face relax and feel down into your lower part of your body. And then just place your hands so they're comfortable. So you could maybe just open the gentle fist or put your hands on your knees or just do whatever you feel like. Some people like to put one hand onto the sacrum, so you could have one hand onto your lower back and one hand here. If you like, just because we'll... Because I want you to get the feeling of it's if you can pull the sound, the vibration down into your body. Okay, so sometimes I think of it like a drum, you know, like say if you're beating a drum, dum, dum, dum. See if you can get the sound, the dum, right down into here. Sometimes I know if you've never learned this mantra, you might be thinking, am I saying it right? Blah blah blah. That our energy's up here then. So just say it, can't say it wrong. So I'll just say it slowly. Om, got that, tip that. Dum, dum, dum. Durgaye namaha. It's very easy, right? Should we just say it first? Om, dum, dum, dum. Durgaye namaha. Simple, okay? So you don't have to think about saying it. We're just going to see if we can feel the vibration down like a drum. Boom, boom, boom into your belly. Okay? Can you, everyone, is that okay? So you might want to have your hands there or not. So just do what suits you, okay? So we'll chant it a few times and then you'll know that we can conclude by just when you hear that sound, okay? So just we'll just keep going until you hear that. Which will go for ages. So, but that is a really good example of the idea. Sorry, I haven't explained this to you already, but the idea of mantra that there are like stages of it, and so there's the idea of the striking, like when I the first sound, and then the vibration continues, and that's why I'm asking you to feel the vibration in you, and then after we stop chanting it. There'll be still a sense of it even after we're not making the sound. And that's kind of like, you could think of it sort of like a feeling tone of the mantra. Sort of like the, like when, before Nina's question, the chanting of it silently in a way. It's the experience of that. And sometimes it's, you actually feel it more after you've been chanting aloud, especially together. Okay, so ready, set, go. Om Dum 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 Durgaye Namaha. 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 feel how it's actually quite inviting to keep your eyes closed? Do you feel that, everyone? Yeah. So it's very tangible what I'm talking about, the magic of it, don't you find? So mantra is this very powerful way of leading you into meditation. It's just, because this idea is that, you know, the concept of that we have these layers of our being, that the outermost layer, the physical layer that we generally associate with as ourselves, it's only just part of us, you know, our skin and our muscles and bones, just an aspect. And then deeper in is the pranamaya kosha, the next layer in relating to your breath, relating to the life force that is in existence all of the time. And then deeper in is our mind layer. And then is the vijnanamaya kosha, which is where to access that wisdom sheath, mantra is what helps us to experience that. And there, and that is where meditation is, in the vijnanamaya kosha. And then deeper in from there is what's referred to as the anandamaya kosha, which is your bliss sheath. So do you see how it's so simple? It sounds like too simple, but you just felt it. Chant the mantra, okay? Get a feeling for it, and it just leads you into bliss, right? And it's so nice to enjoy that, isn't it? So yeah, so how often do you chant it? How much bliss do you want? That's what I say, right? So, you know, I chant mantra a lot, you know, so you may like it too, like that. Because especially what I've noticed is, you know, I'm so lucky I get to teach so many very intelligent people, right? And what I've noticed is often when people have got a really, like, super intelligent mind is that they can be a little bit critical in their mind because they've got really good critical thinking ability, right? But sometimes that can turn into being critical, you know? It's like, you know what I was saying to you about OCD? Like, you know, I can be very focused. That's a good thing, but it's not good if it becomes obsessive. Do you see what I mean? So we're a lot of us can relate to what I'm saying, right? And so the simple way of thinking about how mantra is helpful is that it inclines your mind, at the very least, at the just the simplest level, to thought patterns that are benign, right? Because sometimes, has anyone ever found that they've been thinking about something that's not happening? And not feeling good. Maybe not like the story I was telling you, but who hasn't had something like that? Not exactly like that, but do you know? And so to help us to shift, and it's the idea of like the how do we really want to be? Like this is the idea of transforming. Okay, so it's creating the form of how you really want to be, and that's the concept of the invoking of the mantra into you. So then it's revealed to you that you are that, because that is the that's the whole thing, is that the concept of the symbol, when you, I'm not saying to you that you should believe it because I'm telling you, right? It's that if there is a resonance and you can feel something of this symbolism, right, and there's some meaning for you in that, therefore then that symbol is in you. So this concept of like the goddess and the god, you know, so Shiva, god, Durga, goddess idea, is that you have this in you. Everybody does. That we all do. Right? And that's partly why we say namaste to each other, is that we see it in others through seeing it in ourselves. And so it's this kind of this interbeing. You know, often our minds can see ourselves as separate, but we actually are all interbeing all of the time, just because we don't like always consciously recognize it. But you know, every mouthful that you eat, it's got to do with the whole universe. Like it's a simple bite that you take of an apple has got the sun in it that helped to grow that plant, and the, you know, the earth that supported the roots of that plant, and you know, the people that have been involved in the picking of it who's brought it to you, you know, the water that's rained upon it, you do you get me? Like it's the everything that is, you know, our carbon dioxide has been involved, you know. So this constant like web of life is the truth. It's always the truth. It's just sometimes we don't think about it. So this is all in you, and you are in that, which is a really, you know, that's the whole idea of yoga. That you feel what I'm talking about, even if you don't say it like that. When you are, you know, after you do your sadhana, your own practice, and then you just feel more in love, right? And this whole idea of the in love, you know, is this, you know, it's the, that's what I was trying to say to you before about the source of life, right? The source of love. Again, often, like has everyone in here been in love in your life? Has anyone been in love more than once? Often. Like a lot of people have been in love more than once, haven't we? So although there is this pervading social idea that there's only one true love, right? Many of us have been in love more than once, which means there isn't. But I don't want to argue about that. Not for 10 days. But also, another understanding to help you get what I'm talking about is that talking about being in love, right? So we've all been in love. How we have that feeling of, the birds are singing. Hear the birds are singing. Oh, the sun's shining. You just feel so good. Oh, it's all rainy. Let's all cozy up, right? When you're in love. Whatever the weather, you love it. Because you're in love. Right? Don't you reckon? It's true. Okay? When you're when you're really in love, it's like, oh, fine. When you're in love, it's like, oh, the t-shirt's on the floor. Right? No, some of you guys, that probably doesn't relate to you so much, but many of us women have like got the t-shirt. Oh, maybe guys, I don't know. But lots of women are like, oh, how beautiful, you know. So, yeah, so you can tell by everyone, right? A lot of people have had this experience. And so the thing is that we haven't all been in love with the same person, have we? But we've all had that experience. We've had the feeling of being in love. Right, so therefore, what I'm saying to you about this is that is us connecting into the source of love that is ever present, and the other person has certainly helped us with that. Okay, so that's one example of love. What about the kind of love that's friendship? Okay, if I go through like how it feels to have a really good friend, right? That feeling of dependability and solid and fun and you know all of that we have in a good friend, right? Everyone can relate to what I'm talking about, can't you? Right? Have you got a good friend who, like, no matter what, like, so maybe it's not, maybe you've had, like, both of you have been, like, almost crying at one moment, then the next minute you're laughing your heads off together. Has everyone got a friend like that? You know? So we have, but it's not the same friend, is it? So we understand that. Is there someone in your family that you really love? Families are sometimes a difficult topic, so I didn't want to say everyone in your family. But is there someone in your family you really love? If there is someone in your family that you really love, I could probably describe how that is, and we could all relate to it, right? If one person says, this is how I feel about, you know, my sibling, then the other, they go, yeah, I feel like that. Or, you know, my parent or my grandparent or so on, right? So my point is that this source of love is something that we can all relate to and understand, and it's not contingent on a person. And it's actually really helpful when we recognise that it's not contingent on a person, because then we don't have to put so much pressure on a person to provide it for us, you see? And that's really a lot of what mantra is about. It's opening you up to the source of life, to the source of love. And when you chant the mantra, whichever one is resonant to you, it's just like connecting you to it. You know, that's the kind of, you know, the heart's desire kind of feeling about it. So, do you want me to tell you another story about another mantra? Yes. Maybe you might like to lay onto your back with your arms overhead. We're going to do a yin banana asana. Or, if you'd rather, I like to give options. Okay. So, you might like, so banana asana is when you're laying with your legs out and you just move your feet over to the right and your arms overhead over to the left, so you come up like that. Or you might like to just lay onto your bolster like this. And this is especially if you've had a cough or anything lately and you don't want to lay flat on your back. Often if you put another block here, yeah, so like this. You could do this instead if you like. Just, that's a little tip, by the way, if you ever come to class and you've had a cough and you're better now, we don't spray germs, right? But if you're better now, then that, but then when you lay down, sometimes you cough. So if anyone ever has that, just putting a block bolsters underneath your back to elevate you up a little bit might be nicer for you. So yeah, so please just be in a comfortable, nice position for you. If you're in Banana Asana, you've got your feet over to the right, both sides of your bottom onto the ground. You can hold onto your opposite elbow if you like. If you'd rather just lay onto your back into Supta Baddha Konasana, do that. Or if you want, oh, whatever. You can have your legs out. You do yourself gorgeous. So beautiful. I love you all.
We love you.
So, I was thinking, would you like me to tell you the Ganesha story?
Yes.
And you see, what's really nice, the whole thing about these stories, right, is that has anyone ever looked after little kids and they want you to tell them the story again and again? Have you ever found that? And then as we, we're adults, we don't so much want that, but these stories, hearing them again and again, is actually quite powerful to us. And by the way, that's the idea of mantra, is you repeat it again and again, right? Japa. And it gains meaning through the repetition. So here's the story of Ganesha. So have you heard of Ganesha? He's the one who's, you may have seen statues of Ganesha, especially when you go to Bali. Because these stories have been used in Hindu faith. The way that I'm talking to you, I'm not converting you to Hinduism, believe me. It's more the idea of the symbol that I was saying to you. So the Ganesha statue you might have seen, he's got an elephant head and a boy's legs. Have you seen that one? Yeah. And simply, so a mantra that you might know for Ganesha is Om Gam 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 Ganapataye Namaha, which often is just translated as Ganesha removes obstacles. So you chant that to remove obstacles. So you see how you can kind of hear these sort of simplistic ways of understanding the mantra. And I've been this question before about do you have to know the meaning? Well, so often people chant the mantra and they don't know the story that I'm about to say. And it's still helpful because it's inclining the mind to a particular thought pattern that, as I said to you, is benign. Om gam 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 ganapataye namaha. Om gam 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 ganapataye namaha. It's just, see how, do you feel like repeating it already? You don't even have to hear it very often when you feel like repeating it. Right? So just like with before when we were chanting the Doroka mantra, did you find when we stopped it, you felt like continuing it? So it's kind of like utilizing our brain's kind of capacity, if you like, to want to do that. So you can just have kind of taken that simple way, and that's good, or you can consider this whole big long story ready and what's meaningful to you in it and what potentially can be helpful to you. So the story goes that that there was, about Shiva, right? So Shiva and Shakti. So Shakti is also sometimes given the name of Parvati in this story. Just think of you can think of it as the male and the female. They're in love and they were, it's like the god and the goddess. So they have these magical powers. And he went to go and create the worlds because that was his job, right? So he went off to create the worlds and she was at home in the cave by herself. And there's a couple of versions of the story. One is that she created the child herself out of special magical powers. And the other is that it was their child, but he didn't know about it. But anyway, whatever, there's a child. And this boy, she gave him the task of guarding the cave door while she bathed. So she's in the cave, naked. And he's outside guarding the door, and all of a sudden these great armies arrive at the door. Massive armies, Shiva's armies. He's come back, he's created the world, he's back again. Honey, I'm home. And who's this boy at the door? And the general at the head of the line says, out of the way, child. And he goes, no, I'm guarding the door. And the general goes, don't be ridiculous, you know, look at us. But because the child was born out of this, you know, magic, he had these great powers too. And so he couldn't be killed, the child couldn't be killed. So the general tried to kill him to get him out of the way, and he couldn't. And so, you know, the news goes back down the line to the, you know, to Shiva, like, there's a child not letting us in. He's like, get him out of the way. And anyway, no one can do it. So down comes Shiva at the cave, sees the child, out of the way, child. And he says, no, I'm guarding this entrance. And by this point, Shiva's pretty bothered. And so he pulls out his sword. He recognises there's something magical about the child. He realises he's the only one who'll be able to slay him. So he pulls out his sword and cuts his head off. Please, I'm sorry if it's a bit dramatic, everyone. These stories are very dramatic. Okay, it's just a story. It's not real, it's not real, it's not real. It's just a story. Okay, so so hearing all the kerfuffle, out comes Parvati. And can you imagine? She is pissed off. She's like super angry. She's massive fire coming out of her. And she is so, so angry. She threatens to destroy the worlds that he's created. Like, she's just going to just erase everything that he's done in these past years and his work because she's so mad. Whenever I hear this story, whenever I say it, I think of divorces that I've heard of. Not so funny, I know. Anyway, so the serious point of the story is that she says, you must fix this, because she knows he can. You have to fix it. She knows he can fix it. So he realizes his mistake and straight away says to his general, go and find the first being pointing in a certain direction at a certain time and bring their head to me. And so he does. The general goes off, grabs the which was happened to be an elephant, brings the elephant's head back to the god and goddess, and they place the head on the child, and the child lives with an elephant head, and everyone's happy. And now let's come back to center. If you're laying with your knees apart, you might just want to put your feet wide apart and your knees together. And then move, when you're ready, if you're laying on your bolster, you could just kind of let your knees go side to side for a while if that feels nice, and then just adjust after a while to lay them back out, straight out if you like. So do you see the story? That's the story. How do you feel? A bit dramatic, isn't it?
Why is it such a big...
Pardon?
Why is it such a big Hindu concept?
Why, yeah. Because there's this, because, okay, so it's a good question. So the thing about this story is that everyone's happy about this result, okay? She's happy that she's got the elephant child now. See, don't you find lots of us, we're not, like, we can't quite get that. the story seems a bit... Which is the whole idea. This is the concept of why there is the idea of having a teacher to help explain it, right? It's because... Let's kind of go more into the story now, okay? Let's think of the symbolism of it all. When you're ready, just move your legs over to the other side. So we can look at the story as if they're all like individual different characters, or we can look at it as that they are all aspects of yourself, that you could be in this story as all of the characters. So this is just my way of explaining the story to you, okay? So many of you have probably heard of Brené Brown, right? And her talks on vulnerability, right? So I think that's something that a lot of people are kind of familiar with now. Isn't it interesting that this story that's so old, in many ways, is a story of that? Because when she's in the cave, it's like the vulnerable. That's the aspect that we don't want to show. That's why she says, guard me. So the idea of the boy is an aspect of her, as in that she made that child. Do you see that part of the story? And are you ever like that? Do you ever feel like you've got to guard your vulnerability and not kind of say really how you feel about something? To the person that you love sometimes, because that's the idea, and even to yourself, because if you're thinking this, if you consider this idea that they're aspects of yourself, you know, some of us, we don't listen inside. That's often why people feel yoga so helpful, because I hear it so often when people say to me how it's been transformational for them to kind of get to know themselves more, and to accept and understand and appreciate. And be able to listen to, you know, the parts that sometimes feel that they need protection. And we also have this aspect, which is that idea of the Shiva aspect, which is that of the creator. You know, just looking at it, like I was saying to you before, in terms of yin and yang, you could say like the in the cave is the yin and in the action is the yang. Do you sometimes have your to-do lists? Friends? And see, can you get what I mean? Is sometimes those parts of ourselves are quite cut off from each other. You know, sometimes we can be just doing all the jobs and not be feeling like our heart's in it. That doesn't feel good, does it? We don't want that. That's when people feel like their lives are bereft. So we have this yearning for the union within ourselves, which in these teachings are not separate from the infinite, which is encapsulated by the idea of the way that Shiva is out in the universe creating. So that's like this yearning in all of us to connect to the source of love, source of life. And so my theory about this story is that when the little boy is there, and the little boy is at the door, that sometimes, you know, like the, you know, like in psychology, I don't know if everyone's heard of this concept, but the idea of the adult, the parent, and the child. Has everyone heard of these ideas? these ego states within us, that we've all got these parts to ourselves. The child's part, the parent part, the adult part. That what we'd like to have in life to be, you know, in good relationships with other adults is to be adult. Sometimes in relationships, one of us can be more like the child and the other one acts more like the parent, or vice versa, and not ideal. Oh, and sometimes we can flip. And so it's a big long story, but just this is my kind of take on the idea of the child part of the story, is that when we were children, we decided lots of things. And, you know, some of them may have been very helpful and some of them maybe not. And the reason why it's so, the reason why they're all so happy in that story is because there is a transformation in the child, where the child understands, because some of us may have felt that we've got to guard our vulnerability. Something may have happened, maybe lots of things happened that made us feel like we've always got to guard the cave, that we can't join what is deepest within us with what we're doing in our lives. And there's a need for a transformation of that so we can be whole. And this idea of whole, this word whole, has the same base meaning of holiness. As well as hale, as in healthy. So this is a story about the sacredness of your pure self, your complete self, when you allow for the joining within you of all of the aspects of yourself. So you don't like have to cut, you don't have to like, you know, shut part of it away. The thing is that it's not that the child doesn't die. The child is reborn. Like there's the transformation of it. So it's not to say, don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that, like, that story isn't saying, oh, so always just tell everyone your vulnerabilities. It's not. It's saying, have the strength of the elephant and the joyfulness of the child. The pure energy of a child. And like this like the loyalty and wisdom, you know, that often is a symbol of the elephant. To know when it's the right time to open the door. Because that was the right time to open the door, but the untransformed part didn't know that. Sometimes it's better to keep the door guarded. Do you see what I mean? And so this idea of the wisdom within us, like the idea of Ganesha removing the obstacles. And the mantra is Om Gam 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 Ganapataye Namaha. When you're ready, just coming back to laying in the middle. And then we can just chant that together, if you'd like to. You're laying here. And see if you can get this feeling of this vibration through your whole body, as if you're like a big elephant. As if you've got that solid grounding of the elephant. Om Gam 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 Ganapataye Namaha. Om Gam 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 Ganapataye Namaha.
could stay laying down if you'd rather, or you could move to the wall, or we could sit up to chant Om. So take your time. Choose how you'd like to sit, if you're going to sit. If you are going to sit cross-legged, I just recommend that you have a blanket underneath your ankles and your feet, and then another blanket double folded under your bottom, or your bolster under your bottom. It just depends on you, so but just soft underneath your legs. So you could either sit like that, or you might like to sit like this, with your bottom onto the bolster, and you're just kind of off the edge of the bolster, and you have your knees together. So just while you're getting ready, do you want me to explain to you the symbolism of the 108? So this is a very long story, and I'll just tell you parts of it. That 108 is a profound number for symbolic reasons, as well as it's understood that the distance between the sun and the earth is approximately 108 times the sun's diameter, and the distance between the moon and the earth is approximately 108 times the moon's diameter. And I did check that when I heard that, so I was like, oh, sure. But actually, it's like accurate to within a very, very small amount of time. And the Vedic astronomers understood this. It's pretty incredible, isn't it? Without all the instruments that we have now. So the idea of yoga, the hatha yoga, it's referring to the energetic qualities of the sun and the energetic qualities of the moon. So see, again, it's another symbol for you of balance. So when we're practicing yoga, it's to help us to get into our own equilibrium. Okay? There's another story of the 108, which is that talking about another story of Shiva and Shakti. Okay, this story that they loved each other. Shiva, the male aspect, Shiva, the Shakti, the female. And they were at Shakti's parents' house for dinner one night, and they were having good dinner, but somehow Shakti's dad got in an argument with Shiva, and Shiva got very mad and took off, and he just left, and he just flew off up into the heavens, because, you know, he's magical. And he flew off into the heavens, and Shakti was so upset that she set herself on fire. Like you do. When you're a bit dramatic. And because she knew that would make him come. So he comes back, swoops down, picks her up, her burning body up, which I again, see, I'm giving you so many symbols, but I just think this is so beautiful, this idea that the concept of that's like your soul essence has this yearning for union that isn't concerned about like the outer form. Often as humans, we get very concerned about the outer form, but this story is being lifted up, and then the parts of the body that are burning drop. The story goes to 108 sacred sites in India. And so that's another meaning of the 108. So being lifted up. So she gets lifted up into the heavens, and they live out happily ever after, of course. So when we're chanting the mantra, which, by the way, any mantra, like when we're just chanting the Ganesha, you could chant that 108 times. The Gayatri mantra, you could chant 108 times. We're not going to, though, because we'd still be here later this evening. I'm going to just teach it to you right now, the Gayatri, and then we'll chant Om. Om, just so you know, you probably maybe already know this, but Om is thought to be that encapsulates everything you can say in words, which is what I was trying to say to you before. When you start considering many of the mantras, hear all that whole big story. You could say, well, so Om is the story to do with Ganesha. Om gam 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 ganapataye namaha. Om Namah Shivaya. Om is the name of Shiva, so that's Shiva. Om Dum 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 Durgaye Namaha. So Om's actually about Durga. Do you get me? Om is everything. So there's all these big stories to help us to get parts of it, add it all up together, and that's all held in Om. So it's referred to as the Maha Mantra, the highest of all the mantras. It's like the seed which the, you know, the mighty world grows from, kind of idea of Om. And when you're chanting this, this isn't the only thing that you can do when you're chanting Om, by the way, but when you're chanting Om, if you like, you can get a feeling of the lower part of your body. So this is another like 3-hour workshop that, you know, the chakras. So the idea of the energy centers in your body, which, by the way, one of the weapons that Durga was given was a chakra. Interesting. So base of the torso, into the sacrum, in behind the navel, into the center of the chest, in your throat, into the middle of the brain and the crown of the head, that you can bring the sound of the Om up through your body. So so that there's, I just cut off that bit there, but do you see? Could you tell that I did? Because you can kind of feel like it could have gone, it could have had some silence for a while. And that's the idea of this uniting all of these, all of this together, okay? All of the worlds is actually sometimes how it's described, okay? So that which has got to do with survival, the physical, that's got to do with pure love, infinite space, beyond the elements. That's the idea that's all encapsulated in the Om. Everything that we can say in words, and also the mystery that is undescribable, you know, the mystery of life. And you know what I mean, because we all have those mysterious moments when we go, oh, now that makes sense. Or, you know, when we have an intuition about something, or when, you know, that one when someone calls you that you've just been thinking about, or that, how come do you keep thinking about someone and then you contact them and you find out something, you know? Like those mysterious, like, you have a baby, you know, that's mysterious. All of these things, you know, that we can't even describe, and that's part of what we're tapping into in the mantra, and actually then feeling it within ourselves, okay? So the Gayatri Mantra, okay, we'll just chant it together. It's said to be, thought to be the oldest mantra. It's a mantra to the sun. So shall I say a bit of it and then you say a bit of it? Like that, okay? Because this will be a little while that we'll be sitting to chant the mantra, because we'll go into the Oms, I'll just make that sound when it's time to finish, so you know. You don't have to, because usually the tradition in class is that you wait for the teacher, so when we do 3 Oms, you, like, because that's it. Because you know this thing of entrainment? You know, like when people sing together, they find that people's heartbeats actually start to entrain. It's pretty amazing. And so, although mantra isn't singing, it's chanting. So don't be concerned about how you sound. It's more of a tone, the feeling tone of the mantra that we're chanting. So usually it's, you kind of just have that feeling of when the teacher starts the mantra, then you join in at that time. When we're doing 108, I don't want you to be waiting that we're going to be doing and then all quiet and then all together. Do you see? I want you to go just with your own breath, because the idea is that you breathe in and then so you're actually extending your exhalation, but only so that it's comfortable for you. As we're chanting this, because it's for a period of time, you might find that thoughts enter your mind, but because we're all going to be here, this idea of the mantra is that it's like a life rope to you. When I told you the Durga, my Durga story, that was a life rope to me. I didn't know that I needed it before that happened, but then it was right there when I needed it. And so that's the idea of when you chant the mantra, you get yourself familiar with the rope of it, so that if, when you need it, it's right there. Lots of us just need that little dot, right? So then we'll be really like firm about it. So I'm going to be counting them. You go at your own pace, okay? So you may maybe even do more than 108, maybe do less. Doesn't matter. It's a symbol of the 108, okay, everyone? So The Durga, no, not Durga's my friend, keep coming out. the Gayatri Mantra, okay? So when you're ready, so I'll say part and then you say part back, okay?
Om Buddha Buddha Vasvaha.
Om Buddha Buddha Vasvaha.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Om Buddha Buddha Vasvaha.
Om Buddha Buddha Vasvaha.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Om Buddha Buddha Vasvaha.
Om Rurvasvaha.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Tat Savito Varenyam.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Bhago Devasya Dimahi.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Diyo Yona Prachodayat.
Oh.
rather keep sitting, feel free to, of course.
Chanting is a significant and mysterious practice. It is the highest nectar, a tonic that nourishes our inner being. Mantras profoundly affect you, acting like the ocean waves on your body and mind. When you chant or even listen to them, your energy calms, clicking into their reverent, luminous rhythm. Symbolic death. Just imagine, like Shakti being lifted. The tensions just dissolve away. Just fall to the earth, dissolving into the earth. Earth holds. Mm-hmm.
lifted light. Sense of wholeness. Integration. Holiness. Into peace, into pure light. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Shanti.
like to keep resting, please do. You're so welcome to, everybody. Or we could seal our practice with three Oms. You could just let them wash over you if you want to keep laying down, or give yourself a little cuddle, snuggle, cuddle, darling, cuddle up. Pulling full integration, all of the mantras making sense. And feel them as this feeling of sound vibration, voice available to you of pure peace and love, infinite love. Gentle fist with your right hand, right down low in your belly, just above your pubic bone. Place your other hand on top. Press in as you breathe out. Just bow a little bit forwards. This helps to ground your energy. Namaste. 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 Thank you, everybody.